Blog Talk Radio.
We'll build the drama there for half a moment. Good evening and welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. I am accompanied by
Jay Binkley from Weirdness Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And, you know, I don't know. There's all kinds of drama on the show all the time, but usually it's all radio drama, Dale.
Yeah. And there's drama here in the Eerie House Radio as well from time to time.
Yeah.
The drama of the return of Gar the Ghoul, which we await anxiously for him to heal up there.
Yeah. You and I both talked to him within the last week, and he just, get better, brother. Get better.
That's it. You have our well wishes, prayers, or whatever coming your way. And
everything's coming your way but money, so, you know.
Yep. So while he's sick and in bed, we've got shows about, well, beds.
That's right.
We're putting it to bed.
That's an odd topic I came up with, but, you know, there's some interesting, there's always the deathbed scene, which we'll have one of those tonight, and stories about the bed.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. 30 years ago, I would have taken this in the wrong direction, but I digress. Well, from what I recall, I would have. I don't know. It's been a while.
Yeah. Well, you could remember that?
Yeah, barely. we got Weird Circle, Sam Spade, and have we had Black Chapel here before? It doesn't seem like we did. If so, we haven't had too many.
If we did, there's only been one. I didn't look it up to see if we had. I guess we can do that real quick here.
Yeah. Black Chapel. Sounds like a lipstick or something.
Oh, let's see. Oh, yeah.
Somebody write a jingle for Black Chapel real quick.
Yeah, that's the only one. This is the first one.
First time for this channel. Black Chapel with a story called Mahogany Coffin.
Yeah, there's not a lot of them. This was back from the late 30s. And, again, one of the reasons I wondered about that when I first started looking for it was because the program itself, when I pulled it down and was getting it ready, was only 15 minutes long. That's when I went back to find out that they're from the late 1930s.
Yep, it seems like the farther back you go, the less likelihood that shows were either recorded or recorded and saved.
Right, yeah. And, and that's one thing about the Weird Circle. It was a syndicated show, and it's one of the few where, you know, nearly every episode exists because it was syndicated and shipped out to everyone. And that's why it makes me wonder about other ones. You know, the Boston Blackie was, there's a ton of those. But there are some that are syndicated that there are hardly any episodes even available. It just really makes you wonder, why the heck not?
Well, I'm sure there's a story to each and every one. I mean, it's just like the motion picture industries. You got the classic MGM fire and other travesties that have happened with lost films. I'm sure it's the same for radio.
Yeah.
Where?
Yeah, I'm sure. But
you've even brought up a few times when you told me they just chucked out these tapes and things.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes when a radio station, they're upgrading this, not, well, we don't need these old things. They just threw them out in the dumpster. Just, oh, what? What a terrible thing. Well, there's one reason why Black Chapel only has a few out there. It says just two recordings out of 100 of the show is known to survive today. That means 98% of this frightful series are believed to be lost. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, good old Bob joins Fogsbane in the chat live with us now. Thank you, gentlemen. You assume you're gentlemen, day and age, you know. Who knows?
Well, one. I think we can assume in this point, at this age, you know,
yeah.
Point here.
No, we've met Fogsbane. Yeah. We know.
We know he is. Right, right, right.
Yeah,
we haven't met good old Bob yet, but you know, he was a follower of Gar before he kept joining us here, and still is a follower of Gar. But I mean, that would have to make him a gentleman too, I would think.
Yep. But our advance apologies if we're not using the right pronouns. But
that's right. Because if we're going to offend you, we mean to do it in a better way.
And intentionally. You know, we don't want to offend you by accident. If we're going to offend you, we're going to be, you know, direct.
That's right, yeah.
No hiding. Let's see. We got where do we want to start tonight?
Well, you know, you want to start with the new kid on the block here?
Why not? I'm very curious about Black Chapel.
Yeah, this played on Columbia or CBS roughly at 11:45 at night. That would definitely be the sign of a horror show, considering some radio stations were off the air by then. And the little kiddies wouldn't be around to hear that. So, you know, it just interesting to see the hooded figure was Ted Osborne, who was the host. And it'd be interesting to see how we look at him as one of the early horror hosts. He would be after, of course, after Nancy and after the Hermit on the Hermit's Cave, but not long after, being from 1937 to 39, or right around there.
Yep. Oh, and it's the Black Castle or the Black Chapel? I'm looking at two different things
here. I have two different things here. I believe, hang on a second, let me get look at my other spot, which I went to pull and I didn't. Part 101. It says Black Castle.
Yeah.
I think this is the same thing. I think it was Black Chapel because of where they are. And let me see what the...
We'll find out with the intro, I'm sure.
it downloaded as the Black Castle. Does that mean it is? I don't know, because this is the exact same time as the Black Chapel. So I'm really, and they're 15 minutes, I think this is the only time. Yeah, I think this is the Black Chapel, but we will find out. You're right.
We're gonna find out. It's a quickie too. Part one of one. The Mahogany Coffin. Is there an original broadcast date for this bad boy?
Believe it or not, being only two programs to survive? Yes, there is. This is from June 1st of 1939.
It is a quarter of an hour until midnight. Time for us to go to the Black Castle. Each Friday evening we come to this remote spot, a place of mystery and terror, where a gaunt-hooded figure appears and sits at the keyboard of the ruined old organ, mumbling and gibbering his fantastic tales as his talon hands grip the crack. Little do they know. Little does anyone know. That's about the Mahogany Coffin. The Mahogany Coffin. Maybe you'll want one like it. Yes. Maybe you'll want your coffin to be just like it. So soft and peaceful. Just the thing for a good night's sleep. Listen. You hear the wind? It was just such a night when old Silas Digger died. With only the wind to mourn for him. Many of the town wits had great fun with Silas Digger's name. For that was what he did. He dug graves in a little cemetery on the edge of town. Silas was a good grave digger. The walls of the graves he dug were straight, and they never caved in while the funerals were going on. That's why the cemetery people had hired him, and not old Lou Higgins, the other applicant for the job. Silas was careful with his grave, but he was even more careful with his bed. Silas had worked in the graveyard so long, he wanted his bed to be more soft and comfortable than those many coffins he helped lower into the ground. So board by board, piece by piece, he built his bed, using only the finest of mahogany, yes, heavy mahogany. It cost Silas the wages of many a grave digging just for the wood alone. But it was worth it. And it took Silas a long, long time to make his bed. He measured the boards of the foot and those of the head. They were the same length. He laid them across the frame of the bed and then joined them perfectly, completely covering the frame. The sideboards were built up high, so that when he was lying in the bed, he couldn't see out. Oh, now you're beginning to see, aren't you? Yes. Silas Digger's mahogany bed was to be his coffin. Silas was badly puzzled for a while. How could he fix his bed so that the foot and headboard would close down over him when he died? Then he worked it out. With his dying movement, he would touch a little spring, and foot and headboard would close down over him, and he would be in his coffin. But what about a grave big enough to hold the coffin? He must talk to the graveyard people on the morrow. Silas bought two lots side by side in the graveyard, and when he wasn't busy digging other people's graves, he worked carefully on his own. Yes, he was digging his own grave. Finally, it was done. And now all there was to do was to die. Yes, die in his own bed, and with his dying movement, turn it into his coffin. When they saw the bed folded over him, they would know. And when they started to dig in his two graveyard lots, they would find everything in readiness. For he had just laid a few thin boards over the open grave and covered them with dirt. But Silas didn't die. No, not yet. All these years, old Lou Higgins had hated Silas, hated him beyond reason. And all because Silas had gotten a job at the graveyard, and the cemetery people had told Lou that he should have the job if Silas ever wanted to quit. Lou decided finally that there was only one way to make Silas give up that job. Silas would have to die. And Lou would see to it that he did. Snooping continually in the graveyard, old Lou found out that Silas owned two lots and had already dug his own grave. Yes, and it was covered with only a few thin boards and a little dirt. Ah, he had an idea. Yes, Lou had an idea. He smiled as he thought about it. Silas was lonely, so he made friends with the wind that blew in the graveyard. That's why it mourned for him the night he died. Yes, the wind was his friend, and he told his friend about his coffin and his grave. But Silas Digger was getting very old. He was slow in his work. And it was long after dark. He was still lifting spade after spade of dirt from a pauper's grave. It was hard work. Yes, very hard. And his old bones ached. His skinny legs shivered in the cold and his teeth clicked as he asked his friend the wind about the darkness. Finally, he was through. And he slowly started home when he decided he would walk by his own grave. In the darkness, his friend the wind, in a playful mood, blew just a speck of dirt in his already watery eyes. He blinked, began to chide the wind for its prank. Then he heard old Lou's voice.
Silas, over here. Help me. Help me.
Silas. What was Lou doing here in the graveyard? And what could be the matter with him? Silas started toward that voice. And before he knew it, he walked out onto his own grave. The thin board gave way with a shriek. Down he crashed. When the cemetery people found him, he was quite dead. And his right hand was stretched out above his head, reaching for something. And there was a horrible look of determination upon his face, so horrible that the graveyard people turned away. Standing there with them was old Lou Higgins. Yes, the job was his now, and the first thing he had to do was to bury old Silas Digger. When he tried to put Silas into a little cheap pine coffin, he wouldn't sit. His outstretched hand made him too long. So Lou decided to bury Silas by standing him up in a corner of his grave and covering him with dirt. When old Lou was finished, Silas's fingers were just under the top layer of dirt on the grave. That night, about 2 hours after sundown, the wind began to blow. One little whirlpool of wind seemed more fierce than the rest, and it hovered a long while over a certain section of the graveyard. But no one knew that it was cleaning away the dirt from Silas Digger's body. No. No one knew but the wind. Keeping with any of the other furniture. He wondered about it, the rich mahogany panel, the deep sideboard. No, he wouldn't roll out of that bed. But then it was getting late and he had work to do tomorrow. It was going to be nice to sleep in such a splendid, comfortable bed. Yes, such a splendid bed. The covers were warm under old Lou's skin. Nice and warm. The wind outside was cold. It sounded angry as it swirled around the corners of the house. Then of a sudden it was quiet. There came a deadness of sound so complete that Lou could hear his own heart beating wildly in his withered breast. Paralyzing chill came over him. Icy fingers of fear searched through his brain. What was that? Sounded like the front door. There must be a plank of the wind. No. Then it was again. It was the door. It was coming open. He could feel the wind as it surged through. Anxious to get inside. Faster the wind whirled around the lonely house. It moaned in anger. It heard something. Something on and on. And again the voice of the wind was quiet. Yes. The old man heard them. Those were footsteps. Yes. Slow, heavy footsteps. They scraped across the floor. Then, after the law, then a crunk. Now the steps came closer. A long, sickening scrape and a heavy crunk. Something was coming to his bedroom door. Now no sound at all. The unearthly stillness that he could actually feel. His heart was pounding wildly, choking his throat. He couldn't breathe. He couldn't see. He could only wait and listen, his eyes straining out into the darkness. There was a sound. The doorknob was turning. Now the cat. The old door squeaked slowly. Then came the wind. It squeezed through the tiny crack and rushed into the room. Old Lou could feel it angrily brush across his breast. Now the door burst full wide with the angry wind to get in. And again, there came that silence. The wind was waiting. Old Lou Higgins too was waiting. There was nothing else. Conscious only that he found his heart choking back his scream. There it was again. Closer. The revolting scrape. Then the heavy crunch. Another scraping sound. Closer now. Then the thump. The old man could see a form in the darkness. Black as spot in the blackness of the room. Something heavy was trying to climb over the sideboards of the bed. There he felt it. It was cold and stiff and very awkward. can see it now. Ghastly white. Feet with dirt. One arm above its head. Was the corpse of Silas Digger. He found his voice as Silas fell across him. He screamed into the blackness. He screamed again and again as the dead body rolled across him. And then there was only the wind. The sigh, a deep, long sigh, though it was a final breath released after the job was done. For as the wind rushed out of the room, the head and the foot of the bed slipped quietly together, leaving Silas Digger safe in his mahogany coffin. Safe. With company, too. Yes. With company.
Friday evening at a quarter of an hour before midnight, we come to this remote place, the Black Chapel, and listen to the hooded figure who sits at the keyboard of the ruined old organ, gibbering his fantastic tales as his taloned hands grasp the cracked keys. Listen next Friday evening for the sinister tale of a strange bequest. This is the Columbia Broadcast.
The Black Chapel it is, and this guy's got to make it into some kind of recognition for a classic radio horror host from early on.
Yep. If only there had been more recordings of it. And there's, you know, Black Chapel actually shared several similarities with Black Castle, but that was in the early 1940s. Both were 15 minutes long horror anthology shows, but with one character performing all the roles. Black Chapel was the originality award because it was more daring and diabolical. After all, anyone can set up a horror series in a black castle, a black museum, or a black night, but to actually use an abandoned black chapel as the epicenter of evil seems sacrilegious, if not downright satanic. Comes to us from the radiohorrorhost.com.
On the description. That's why I like it.
Of comparing the two. Yep.
That's why I like it.
And you know what? No. There's another similarity is that's another program of which there are only two episodes that have survived.
Coincidence? Maybe not.
I think not. Yes.
Maybe not. Very good. We're probably going to have some bonus time today. And that just means more cool radio stuff.
Lots of cool radio stuff. Absolutely.
Fun and shenanigans. But we'll never resort to smut unless it's absolute desperation.
Unless it's necessary, right. Yeah,
yeah, if it's necessary. If it's the context.
If it's necessary.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Of what we're doing. And we're doing beds.
Yep.
So who knows what we might hear.
You know what? Here, Fogsbury doesn't need. Fogsbury was talking that he wished that he knew carpentry. He doesn't need to. He's got a 3D printer. He can make anything in plastic.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
No, but there is something about things made of wood and made well,
yes.
Be it furniture or even like lattice work on a house or something. You know, there's just something to that. A skill. It's a craft. But it's probably like anything else. If you take it up and you're interested in it and you keep working at it, you get good at it.
Some people do.
You tend to like the things you're good at, or you get good at the things you like. One or the other. Which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Yeah. In that case, you know, really having the interest in it probably led to either the ability to learn it or the natural ability that you had with it.
Could be.
I know that I had wood in shop in junior high. Boy, I enjoyed that. I think there are times when, man, I wish I had some time to spend with that. But, yeah, no, I don't really have time to spend with that.
Yeah. It's a natural thing, too. I mean, you're taking something that was living, a hunk of wood, and making something useful out of it, or artistic, or both.
Are you talking about me again?
No, not at all.
Terrible. It's terrible. Did you ever, you know, we're doing shows about beds. Did you ever, as a kid, have any kind of fears at night while you're lying in bed?
No, I only remember an occasional nightmare type thing, but no, I didn't really, it didn't really spook me because maybe not as
no
much as you did today.
No monsters at the foot of or under the bed or
no,
anything like that?
No, nothing like that. You?
Oh, a little bit.
Did you really?
Sometimes I would wake up and like, you know, your vision hasn't quite adjusted and it's either the dim of morning or maybe as you're getting sleepy at the dim of night, I think I would, my imagination would misidentify certain shapes in the dark.
I do remember one time I was in a bit of a deep sleep and the Time After Time was on with Malcolm McDowell and where he was H.G. Wells going back. And going forward in time to catch the Jack the Ripper. Well, there was a music piece when he opened up his stopwatch that would play, you know, which meant he was Jack the Ripper was going to kill somebody at that point. And I had fallen asleep on the couch watching it. And my ex-wife came in to wake me up to say, are you going to come to bed? And she woke me up right as that music came on and started screaming. She started screaming and running for the other room.
And you probably screamed.
Oh, my. I did scream. That's what made her scream and run the other room. Yeah.
Good work. Good work. Then it was all worth it. Yeah.
The GG Sci Papers join us now, Dale.
Hey. Just in time for most of the show. You missed a short one from the Black Chapel, but that's okay.
Are you talking about me again?
It'll be in the archives. It'll be there.
Are you talking about me again?
No, not at all.
Oh, my, that's terrible. All right, where should we go next?
Let's climb into bed
shall we go?
Sam Spade.
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's
I'll tell
that
you something
next.
About Sam Spade. I enjoy the character, but I love the radio character, and I love Howard Duff's portrayal of it. Now, he kind of got wrapped up for no reason at all with the blacklisting, and as a result, the Cream Root Hair Tonic left them a sponsor, which left NBC without the sponsor, and they booted off Howard Duff. And they brought in Sam Dunn, who was a good actor, but he wasn't Sam Spade. And they would give him the same script. It just wouldn't be the same. And then Howard Duff did a pilot called The Real McCoy. We played that here back on a pilot that didn't get off the ground a weekend. But it was great. It was just like a Sam Spade episode, except he had a different name. And, yeah, I mean, he had the secretary, and he came in with a different song and things like that. But it is because he'd been blacklisted for no apparent reason. It didn't matter. The networks wouldn't touch it.
Commie. He's a commie. No.
Yeah. But,
we don't know.
So, anyway, that's just my thoughts on it. It was a great show, and it was Howard Duff that made Sam Spade. He had the right kind of seriousness and toughness and humor and sarcasm that really made this work. Sam Dunn just didn't have the sarcasm that really made it work like Howard Duff did. And that's why tonight I'm happy to present Howard Duff.
In the Deathbed Caper from Sam Spade, originally broadcast.
Oh, June. We're stuck in June tonight. June 20th of 1948.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective, brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic, the non-alcoholic hair tonic that contains lanolin. Wild Root Cream Oil, again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
Ah!
It's me, sweetheart, risen from not one, but two deathbeds.
Oh, Sam, I bet not. You wouldn't take that lying down.
Oh, Effie, you made a joke.
Well, you did first, Sam.
I did not.
Oh, you mean you actually
Now, don't pin me down. Anyway, I was present at two dying declarations. Would you believe, Effie, that a man could say something that wasn't true at a time like that?
Oh, no. You mean a man will be lying on his deathbed?
Oh, Effie, you made a joke.
Oh, Sam, now stop it. I don't know
what you're
It's
all right, Effie. I forgive you. You can atone by telling me how wonderful you think I am.
I think you're...
That you may do when I arrive in a trice to dictate my report on the deathbed caper.
Dashiell Hammett, America's leading detective fiction writer and creator of Sam Spade, the hard-boiled private eye, and William Spear, radio's outstanding producer-director of mystery and crime drama, join their talents to make your hair stand on end with the adventures of Sam Spade. Presented by the makers of Wild Root Cream Oil for the hair. Tell me, mister, how many times a day do you have to comb your hair? Not many, I'll bet, if you groom it right, first thing every morning with Wild Root Cream Oil. For this famous hair tonic grooms your hair neatly and naturally and helps it to stay that way throughout the day. Wild Root Cream Oil also relieves dryness and removes loose dandruff. With Wild Root Cream Oil, you don't have to keep combing your hair every 2 minutes. That is, unless your gal can't resist running her hands through it. Get Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. And now, with Howard Duff starring as Spade, Wild Root brings to the air the greatest private detective of them all in the adventures of Sam Spade.
Many brave hearts are asleep in the deep.
Oh, Sam, you're a sailor.
Captain Sam, there's the brig for you. You got your logbook handy, gal?
Oh, yes, Captain.
So beware.
You make it, that's awful deep.
Date, June 20th, 1948.
Where? Oh,
I have no shame. To Marin County Sheriff's Office, San Rafael, California. Attention, Deputy Woodington from Samuel Spade, license number 137596. Subject, the deathbed caper. Dear Bill, the dawn came up like thunder out of Chinatown across the bay. In San Francisco, all we could see was fog. But on your side, it must have lifted briefly because somebody named Dan Starbuck managed to find his way to a phone booth, call me, and ask me to meet him at the 3rd Street Pier in Sausalito. I didn't see him when I first got there. I didn't even see the pier. It was too foggy. But in the glow of the neon lights in front of the Viking Saloon, I saw a man who seemed to be waiting for somebody. Mr. Starbuck?
Dan Starbuck. Come on down to the end of the pier. I'll explain as we go along. We've got to hurry.
You act hot. You wanted for something?
Well, not yet.
What's the caper?
Well, my brother's out there on his yacht, the Marguerite. He's dying. When he's dead, they may call it murder. I want to be there with a witness. That's you. In case he has anything to say about who did it.
Who did?
They think I did.
Did you?
Well, honestly, I don't know. It happened night before last. I went out there to see him. We've hated each other for years. We've both been drinking, and we drank some more. Then there was a fight. I drew a blank somewhere. Next thing I knew, it was around midnight. I pulled myself together, went into his cabin. Gordon was lying there with his head all caped. I realized I was covered with blood, and I was holding something in my hand, big glass paperweight. I dropped it. I got out of there fast and swam ashore. I planned to tell you a different story, but that's it. You want the job or not?
You think you'll make a deathbed statement that'll clear you, and you want me for a witness?
Yeah, that's it.
You got a lot of guts. I'm hired.
Good. Halverson? Get down there. Halverson!
Who's Halverson?
He's a boatman. He'll row us out. Halverson! Hey, Nils!
Donnie?
Yeah. Is that you, Casino?
Sure. Can I do you some favor?
I want to go out to the Marguerite. I can't find Halverson anywhere.
Well, I guess I can take you. Are you sure that
yeah,
you...
Yeah, I'm sure. Sam Spade, Del Casino. He's the bosun of the Marguerite.
Glad to meet you.
Same.
Any friend of Danny's. Hey, listen, Danny, you sure you want to go out there?
Any reason why you shouldn't?
Well, it's up to him. In his place, I would be on a freighter for China, way out there where the fog is more thicker.
No, it's all right, Casino. I know what I'm doing.
Well, your friend, you excuse me, your name?
Spade.
Pardon me, I better ask. The police don't want you for nothing?
Not yet, but don't make book on it.
Push us clear, Danny.
All right.
This fog is closing in, but I can still see the lights from the Marguerite. I wish we don't find her.
But we did. She was wearing clam diggers, an off-the-shoulder T-shirt, and was leaning against the rail as the dinghy pulled past the police launch and nestled in under the ladder of the yacht.
Dale, is that you?
Yes, Mrs. Starbuck.
Who is that with you?
Keep quiet.
Dale, what are they saying ashore about... Oh, I thought you...
You're Mrs. Starbuck?
Yes?
I'm Sam Spade. I'm from San Francisco. I'm a detective. Your brother-in-law's in the boat.
You captured him?
He wants to come aboard.
He wants to? Why?
He's hoping your husband will say something to clear him before he dies. Is there any reason why he shouldn't come aboard?
Oh, there's every reason in the world why he shouldn't. The police are in there with my husband right now.
Yeah?
The doctor says there's a possibility that he may regain consciousness long enough to make a dying declaration.
Mm-hmm.
If he's face to face with Dan, there's no telling what he'll say. I wish Dan wouldn't. My husband is dying.
Dan?
Yeah. What'd she say?
I don't know, but I think you better come aboard. He seemed almost delighted as he swung his weight up out of the dinghy and climbed the ladder. Del Casino, the bosun, followed, wearing a puzzled expression that turned to fear as we entered the cabin. The yellow glare from the lamp swinging overhead was almost blinding to walk into out of the foggy night. The first thing I focused on was the bunk that held the dying man. His head was heavily bandaged, his skin was chalk white, and his lips were beginning to turn blue. The room was tense with waiting. Ranged around him in a semicircle were the supporting players. Two doctors, one family type with a nurse, one police medic without, one sheriff with cigar, one police stenographer, female, with pencil and notebook poised, 9/10 of a widow, and us. At 18 minutes past 7, somebody moved. It was a dying man. The two doctors rushed forward, took his pulse and blood pressure.
Mr. Goff, adrenaline 3cc, carmine 1, saline solution.
Oh.
All right, Sheriff, he's conscious now, but you'd better hurry.
Margaret. Mr. Starbuck, you can hear me all right?
Mm-hmm.
Take that down.
Can you hear me? Affirmative answer.
Now, Mr. Starbuck, we have to ask these questions. One, what is your name? Please try to answer. What is your name?
Gordon M. Starr.
You got that?
What is your name, Gordon M. Starr?
That's close enough. Fill it in later. Now, Mr. Starbuck, where do you live?
I'm dead.
You got that? 1277 Marymount, Pasadena.
Hey.
Now, Mr. Starbuck, let's try a little harder, hmm? This is a long one. Have you been injured, and what was the cause of your injury?
Yes. Hurts, man.
You got that?
Affirmative.
Now the second part. What was the cause of your injury?
Head. Head on head.
Do you believe that you're about to die as a result of your injuries and have you no hope of recovery?
I know. No hope.
Now let's get to the point. Who inflicted said injuries?
My.
Mr. Starbuck, please, you haven't much time, you know.
Go away.
Doc, is there anything you can do?
I'm afraid not.
This is ghastly. Can't you leave him alone? Can't you let him die in peace?
What are you afraid of, Maggie? What are you afraid he'll say?
All right. All right, tell them, Gordon. It was Dan that struck you, wasn't it? He was jealous. He always hated you for marrying me. It was Dan.
Now, Mrs. Starbuck, I know how you feel, but we can't allow this sort of thing. Please step aside so we can finish up here. That's it. Mr. Starbuck. Doctor?
Very low pulse. I'm not sure.
Dan.
Whether...
Dan. Is Dan here?
Here I am, Gordon. Tell him. Tell him the truth.
Do you identify this man, Mr. Starbuck?
Yes. He's my brother. Dan.
Yeah.
You got that, brother Dan? He's
the one.
He's lying. Gordon, you know who did it. Why don't you tell the truth? What do you got to lose now?
Nothing. Nothing. I'm finished. You finished me.
Gordon! Gordon, not yet. Now come back. Doctor, can't you...
He's dead. Well...
Okay, Doc. Dennis Starbuck, it is my duty as sheriff of this county to take you into custody on suspicion of murder. And I must tell you that anything you say may be held against you. You'd better come along too, Spade. Routine questioning, you know.
Okay, Sheriff.
Well, I don't think we'll need the handcuffs, will we, son?
No, I'll go with you.
All right. Yes, indeed, son. It's always smart to come along quietly.
Yeah. But this is as far as I'm going.
Hey, Dan, come back here.
Hey, boy,
use
Dan.
Your head.
He only had one friend. It was the best friend in the world for a man on the land, the fog. The searchlights on the police launch spun frantically as the craft heeled around in a half circle to head him off. Instead of cutting the fog, the beams from the powerful lights bounced back from it and blinded the men behind them. After 10 minutes of that, they gave up. The sheriff had a theory.
Don't worry. Between the fog and the currents, I doubt if we'll make it. We'll probably recover the body in the morning.
And they did. But it wasn't Dan Starbuck's body. It was the bosun, Del Casino. And he was found in Richardson Bay, adrift in the dinghy from the Marguerite. Somebody had creased his skull with the same type blunt instrument that had been used on Gordon Starbuck. But Dell hadn't lived long enough to make a dying declaration.
The makers of Wild Root Cream Oil are presenting the weekly Sunday adventure of Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, Sam Spade. Here's important news on good grooming. If you want the well-groomed look that helps you get ahead socially and on the job, listen. Recently, thousands of people from coast to coast who bought Wild Root Cream Oil for the first time were asked, how does Wild Root Cream Oil compare with the hair tonic you previously used? The results were amazing. Better than 4 out of 5 who replied said they preferred Wild Root Cream Oil. And no wonder. It gives you the advantages that men consider most important. Wild Root Cream Oil grooms your hair neatly and naturally, relieves annoying dryness, and removes loose dandruff. What's more, non-alcoholic Wild Root Cream Oil is the only leading hair tonic that contains soothing lanolin that's like the oil of your skin. So ask for Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. By the way, smart girls use Wild Root Cream Oil too, and mothers say it's grand for training children's hair.
Okay, and I just thought it tastes
great. If you
were
trained here.
Yeah. That's right. Trained here. You know, go ahead, here.
Yeah. Hey, where's my hair going? Anyway, that's a question I've been asking for a while. Anyway, here's some interesting voices in here. Of course, we heard William Conrad, and we heard Kathy and Elliot Lewis. They indeed were married. During this, they may have not, maybe they were probably married at this point, and they also were married during the run of Suspense, and during the mid-50s, they also did a series together, of different types of stories. A lot of it was almost ad-lib type thing through there, but interesting voices that we have coming through tonight on this Sam Spade episode.
Yes.
And I love, like I told you, I just love his portrayal of Sam Spade. Probably more than I liked Bogart doing it. It's just Bogart didn't have the right kind of sarcasm for this type of role.
Yeah, he, our radio guy here pulls it off well. Your classic radio detective.
And so well known was he as Sam Spade, the first movie role he got, and when his name came on the screen credit at the beginning, it says, Radio Sam Spade.
Trying to cash in on that. There you go.
But he did a wonderful episode of Twilight Zone, and he did a show I liked in the late 60s called The Felony Squad. I had watched that.
By the way, yesterday was Twilight Zone Day. Did you know that?
Oh, was it? Wow.
Yes, it was.
I think
World
of His Own
was
the name of
it. I happen to have the day off. I happen to have the day off, and one of my Roku channels had all day long Twilight Zone. And then I'm seeing stuff off popping up on Facebook while I was making ads and prepping for the show about Twilight Zone Day. So I thought I'd jump in the mix and posted all our little Twilight Zone referenced ads.
And the Freevee channel, also on Roku and on Fire Stick, owned by Amazon, but on there right now they have all five seasons of the original Twilight Zone. And if you didn't see the latest one that CBS was doing, it was only streaming, you can catch those episodes right there too.
I recommend that, all 5 years, because season four is the toughest one to find anywhere. Season four were the hour-long episodes, kind of an experimental year.
Well, what it was is they got canceled at the end of season three, and CBS asked Rod to bring it back for a mid-season replacement. And he said, look, I'm down here teaching college. So, well, do your part from there. But they wanted it an hour long instead. And so even though it was only a half a season, it was still like 22 episodes, 23 episodes.
And they were all hour-long episodes.
All hour-long, yeah. I think one of the biggest ones that stands out, my wife loves the Lady Anne, which is about the boat. My favorite one was probably On Thursday We Leave for Home, and an amazing episode there. And Death Ship with Jack Klugman was also a really good one.
Yep. I didn't mind The Dollhouse with Robert...
Robert Duvall, yeah.
Robert Duvall, yeah. That was pretty good about The Dollhouse. Very interesting. But we've got an interesting show with Sam Spade. Let's wrap up.
We do.
The Deathbed Caper. We'll be back.
And now back to Caper with Two Deathbeds. Tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
Police theory of the Del Casino killing went something like this. Casino had shoved off in the dinghy to join in the search for Dan Starbuck, had rescued him, and been maced for his pains. Also found in the dinghy, but not as yet worked into the police theory, were two items. One, a waterproof wallet containing the seaman's papers of one Nils Halvorsen. Two, a tattoo mark on the right bicep of the deceased. A small heart with a name in it, Maggie. The brand new widow of the same name was waiting in my office when I got there the following afternoon.
Hello.
Hello to you, Mrs. Starbuck. What can I do for you?
Mr. Spade, I know very little about the ethics of your profession, and... Well, are you still working for Danny?
If you mean, do I know where he is, the answer's no.
Oh, I hoped you'd say that.
Why?
Because I want you to work for me.
Need a new bosun?
You needn't have put it quite so crudely.
No, I needn't.
Since your work is confidential, I'll admit I've done a few things that... Well, it's all too true. My first mistake was marrying Gordon Starbuck when I didn't love him. And I should never have let myself fall in love with Dan. I certainly should have known better than to let Dell fall in love with me.
What about Nils Halvorsen?
And me? Well, hardly. No. Nils Halvorsen was employed by my husband for various odd jobs whenever we put in at Sausalito. Mostly he'd row the guests out to the ship. He rode Danny out the night my husband was killed. At least I think he did. I didn't actually see him.
Where's Halverson now?
I don't know. He goes off on drunk for days at a time, but I have a feeling that someone has paid him to disappear. He might have overheard something.
Hold on a minute. You're going too fast. Are you working up to a confession?
Oh, no. It's just that I'm afraid a great injustice may have been done to Danny. After all, Mr. Spade, a man who's dying, I don't see how he could be altogether in his right mind. Do you?
The law says he is if he knows his name and address. A deathbed accusation is the strongest evidence a lawyer can shove at a jury. You can't cross-examine a dead man, and most people have the quaint idea that a man on his deathbed is a lot more truthful than he was when he was hale and hearty.
Then you think Gordon may have been lying?
Could be, or wool gathering, or picking up some of the lines you were feeding him.
Oh, I was just afraid he might die before he... You see, I thought I might shock him into saying yes or no. He could have said no, couldn't he?
Well, make up your mind.
Oh, all I know is it's on my conscience now. If we could find old Halverson and force him to tell what he knows. He's a very strange man. He's devoted to me. If the police find him before I do, he might refuse to talk out of a mistaken loyalty.
To you?
Well, I meant if he thought I had anything to do with it. Well, he's very strange. I told you that.
What makes you so sure he's alive?
Why wouldn't he be?
If I'd been the killer and he'd rode me to and from the scene of my crime, I'd see him secured in Davy Jones' locker. Fish feed, lobster bait, asleep in the deep.
Will you work for me?
I'll let you know. I didn't have time to get tattooed, but the rest of me was marinated enough. On my head, I was wearing a dirtied-up yachting cap. And the rest of me, I was wearing a pea jacket, dungarees, and sea boots. I was also wearing clamshell number 5 as I rolled up to the Viking Saloon.
Well, what would it be, mate?
Akavit and Varta. Have you seen my cousin?
Your cousin? Who's your cousin, Prince Valiant?
No, my cousin, Niels Halverson. Niels Halverson.
Oh, no. You're Niels' cousin,
yes,
are you?
Yes.
Well, coming from the old country?
Yeah, Minnesota. By you, Minnie.
Well, no, he'll be right glad to see you then.
Where is he?
I don't want to say this too loud.
Yeah.
Bend over there. He's in trouble, you know.
Oh?
Yes. I got him holed up down below.
Oh.
Yeah, come on.
Well, by golly, I sure been glad to be going to see my cousin Niels. Niels Halverson.
Drop the act and get down there.
Hey! Okay, Joe, I'll take over from here. Easy.
Okay, Danny, my boy. I got his gun. But watch him now, watch him. He's full of smorgasbord.
Well, Spade, you're the one person I didn't expect to see, but I'm very glad to.
Yeah, I wish I hadn't found you. I wanted to find somebody else first.
Halverson?
Yeah.
He's here. Want to see him?
That's what I came for.
And under here. Watch your head, low bridge.
Yeah.
Hey, here we are.
Where?
A boathouse under the pier. Halverson used to hole in here to sleep off his schnapps.
Where's he now?
Over here.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's going to be a long time sleeping this one off.
He'd been missing since that night. Nobody knew he was here till last night. I headed for the saloon when I swam ashore. Joe hid me out here. He could still talk then.
What'd he say?
I wrote it down here. But it's no help.
Let's see it.
Well, it's just a jumble of words.
Marguerite. Merry Christmas drink. My beautiful Helga. Row, row your boat. Now throw me back. Row me back. $20 good and drunk. Fog rolling in. Good and drunk. Gonna be 5 days, no business. Oh, my head. Paint the boat.
All crazy stuff.
$20. Did you give him $20 to row you
out?
I
didn't even see him. I swam out. My loving brother wouldn't have let me on board if he'd heard me arriving like a gentleman.
$20. Did you frisk him?
No.
I'll have a look. Oh, I don't... Hey, wait. Uh-huh. Real soggy, but a 20.
I don't care. I'm sticking to my story. I swam out there. I didn't give him that 20.
Maybe you didn't. Maybe you didn't.
You gotta believe me. I didn't even have $20. That's why I
got... Shut up.
What's the matter with you? What are you going to do?
Come over here, Dan.
What?
I don't believe a word of your story, and even if I did, it wouldn't make any difference.
What are you...
Shut up. You're going to stop talking and listen for a while. I stuffed a gag into his mouth and muscled him over to a piling and handcuffed him to it. He didn't even look surprised. He just stood there staring at me as if he'd lost his last friend in the world. But I wasn't looking at him as much as I was listening to those footsteps and the boards overhead. I waited for them to come back. They did. I walked across the soggy planks to where Nils Halvorsen lay in the shadows. Nils, I want you to answer these questions again. Now, this time, I'm going to take them down. You get lots of $20 and lots of drink. Now then, I know you don't feel so good. You don't have to talk if you don't feel like it. Just nod your head for yes and shake it for no. Okay, Nils? That counts in a court of law as long as there's a witness. Okay. Now, your name is Nils Halvorsen. Your address is 213 Bayview, Sausalito. That's correct, is it? Nod your head. Good. Good. That proves you're in your right mind. You know you were injured. Yeah. You know the cause of your injury. Hit on the head and thrown over the side of your boat. What? Huh? Not from... Oh, dinghy. Well, it's the same thing. All right. Now, you know you're dying. You have no hope of recovery. That's obvious, but nod your head. That's the boy. Now, Nils, on the night of the 18th, around 10 o'clock, after your usual working hours, you rowed somebody out to the yacht Marguerite in return for which this person gave you a $20 bill. This person is also the person who killed, who inflicted your fatal injuries. It is. Now, the name of that person, if you can possibly speak even in a whisper, so there can be no mistake. Can you hear me? Just say it close to my ear. Yeah? Yes. Yes, I got it. That's all. Now, I know you don't write, Nils, but make your mark here. Come on, I'll guide your hand. There. Now we're going to take... Nils. Nils. Well, anyway. All right, Maggie. Come on in and join the party. Don't try anything. The light's on you. I'm a better shot than you, and if there's a ruckus, the whole saloon will be down on us. They're all friends of Danny's, too. Stop there. Toss the gun. Okay. What's the matter, Angel? You look kind of scared.
No. Just disappointed, that's all.
Don't give up so easy, sweetheart. I always wanted to take a trip around the world.
We might go on the Marguerite together.
Yeah. Yeah, sailing into the sunset, sleeping with our deathbed statements under each other's pillows.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I guess it wouldn't work. How much for yours, and what do we do about him?
Dan? I'll take care of that. Throw it in with a deal.
Okay. But I want it in writing. A little statement to the effect that I can keep under my pillow.
Fair enough. Now all I want from you is a little statement from you to this effect. That you, Marguerite Starbuck, employed Nils Halvorsen to row you out to the yacht on the night of the 18th, that you there overheard a quarrel between your husband and brother-in-law, and that taking advantage of said brother-in-law's inebriated condition, you sneaked up behind your husband, hit him with a paperweight, and decamped, leaving the murder weapon in Dan's hand. You then started back to shore in the dinghy, and realizing that the only witness who could testify you were aboard that
night... All right,
night...
all right. All right, I'll sign it.
Okay.
We'll have plenty of time to put in all the legal decorations later.
I'm afraid we won't, baby. You're going to be spending all your available time at Tehachapi and Points West.
What are you talking about?
You just made a full confession in front of a witness. You heard it, didn't you, Dan?
Every word.
Oh, if I... Honest. An honest man.
Well, I did tell a fib. Now, this is really going to hurt, I'm afraid, Maggie. You see, we didn't actually have any deathbed statement to match yours.
No?
No. Nils Halvorsen was a good deal too dead to have made a deathbed statement just now. He's been stiff for 12 hours. Period, end of report.
Sam, I'll type this right up because then I'm leaving.
Wait a minute, Effie. I had to do it that way. Don't you understand?
Of course, Sam. I quite understand.
But you object, huh? A cruel, ruthless, murdering, though beautiful woman, foiled by a clever ruse, a great acting performance by the greatest private detective of them all.
Is that all?
You're still leaving?
Yes, Sam. My bags are packed.
Well, pardon me for having feet.
There's a reason, men. In fact, there are five big reasons why more men every day are turning to Wild Root Cream Oil for well-groomed hair. Wild Root Cream Oil grooms your hair neatly and naturally. Wild Root Cream Oil relieves dryness and removes loose dandruff. Wild Root Cream Oil is non-alcoholic and contains soothing lanolin. Five big reasons why you, too, should join the millions with handsome, well-groomed hair. Why you should step up to your drug or toilet goods counter and ask for Wild Root Cream Oil. Get the big economy bottle and the handy new tube that's easy to pack when you travel and just right for the office or plant. Also, ask your barber for a professional application of Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
Well, here it is, Sam. Goodbye.
Now, wait a minute, Effie. You can't leave like this, not without...
Oh, all right. I'll talk to you while I'm putting my hat on.
Well, can't you at least look at me? After all, you should give me a chance to justify...
Sam, apparently you're laboring under an apprehension.
Of course I am.
Oh, boy, am I glad I picked the last in June and the first in July.
What are you talking about?
My vacation.
Vacation? You just had a vacation a few months back.
Well, Sam, that's a year.
Well, if you want to take advantage of a legal technicality...
No, Sam, don't say goodbye, man.
Well, it's customary, I suppose. It's lucky that some of us keep our nose to the grindstone, our ear to the ground, an eye to the future.
Huh?
Television's just around the corner, you know.
Oh, Sam.
Come here, sweetheart. You look lovely in it. Come here. Have a wonderful time.
Oh, Sam.
Now, go on. You miss your train. Where are you going?
To Los Angeles.
Well, just so you don't go to Kanab, Utah.
All right, Sam. You know best. Good night.
Good night, Sierra Sue. Now, who can we get for that part next week?
Broke the third wall.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, are produced and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade is played by Howard Duff. Loreen Tuttle is Effie. The Adventures of Sam Spade are written for radio by Bob Tallman and Gil Dowd, with musical direction by Lud Gluskin. Join us again next Sunday when author Dashiell Hammett and producer William Spear join forces for another adventure with Sam Spade, brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. This is Dick Joy reminding you to...
Get Wild Root Cream Oil, Charlie. It keeps your hair in trim. You see, it's non-alcoholic, Charlie. It's made with soothing lanolin. You better get Wild Root Cream Oil, Charlie. Start using it today. You'll find that you will have a tough time, Charlie. Keeping all the gals away. Hiya, Baldy. Get Wild Root right away.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Wait, there's more. No.
I find it hard to believe that something with Wild Root would not be a non-alcoholic. You know, it's not like Wild Root beer. That would be alcoholic, right? Wild Root beer would be that.
I don't know.
Wild Berry. That would be alcoholic, you know? They go together. But there is something we can learn from this episode.
I was wondering if we would. And it appears that we shall. Erie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
Apologies to Gar. The best way to get a deathbed confession is to make sure the guy giving the deathbed confession is still alive. There you go. That's it.
Yes, it was all about dreams.
It was. It was.
That's terrible.
I love those Sam Spade. I love his sarcasm, but his seriousness and the fun and the, you know, the tough guy. It's all wrapped into one 23-minute script for these things. And Howard Duff just pulls off every facet of it. I love it.
Excellent. Well, do you think we should pay the bills and take care of some advertisement?
Well, I suppose we should.
We got time. We certainly have time.
We do.
Here's a message from our sponsor.
Not really. Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Not really.
Real Men of Genius. Today we salute you, Mr. Athletic Groin Protector Inventor.
Mr. Athletic Groin Protector Inventor.
People love to play sports, but they don't love it when they get hit in the twig and berries.
Oh!
For years, cringing fans watched as man after man went down. But then you came along and said, here, stick this in your pants.
Not to miss you.
The errant headbutt, the inside fastball, the wayward high five, all no match for your crash helmet.
I'll bring it on!
Sure, some athletes shun them, but don't worry, they'll come around.
Show us the way!
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light protector of the package and know that we're just nuts about you. Bud Light beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Good God. Well, some states it may not be necessary, but I digress. We got more radio.
We do have some more radio, don't we?
Another bedtime story, so to speak. And why not end with a classic creepy show from Weird Circle?
Yeah, an RCA syndicated feature from the RCA Recorded Program Services. A alliteration, if I ever heard one there. Anyway, independent programming, RCA Victor. Its sound quality, voice talent, production values meet traditionally high RCA standards. And again, this is one that pretty much all the episodes are available through the syndication, that somebody kept these, the records of the whole series, and didn't throw them out in a dumpster. Thank you very much. It was reportedly recorded out of RCA's New York studios and almost immediately licensed to both NBC Red RCA WEAF and the Mutual Broadcasting System out of New York, WOR and WGN, which is Chicago, consisting of two 39 script seasons of 25-minute productions for local sponsors and networks alike. So there we go. And they kind of had built sometimes programs around it, like the Far Better Ice Cream, Ogden's Theater, that kind of a thing. But that was the good old Weird Circle, having classic stories, which means they were in public domain, so nobody had to pay for them, you know. But they had a lot of things from Poe and other classic stories as well. Yeah.
Well, we got a good one tonight, A Terribly Strange Bed.
This is an adaptation. This was an adaptation of the Poe story as well.
Sure.
And it comes to us.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You had it. You had it.
I think it comes to us from June. At least we broke out of June. This is July 29th of 1940-3.
Out of the past, phantoms of a world gone by speak again the immortal tale, A Terribly Strange Bed.
Jack Westcott was the best friend I ever had. He was the gayest of people. That was until we left America. I was writing a book about historic murder cases and had come to Paris to do some research work. Jack was fascinated with my work. Strangely fascinated. Almost horribly so. He enjoyed finding twisted minds and probing them. His hunger for crime was bound to end in tragedy. On the last evening of our visit in Paris, we were walking on the left bank of the Seine River when Jack noticed a crowd gathered about our old friend, the head of the Paris police force, Inspector Duval. I was in a hurry to return to the hotel to finish writing my murder manuscript. The deadline was in the morning, but Jack insisted on stopping.
What's the excitement all about, Duval?
Well, hello, Mr. Westcott. Still looking for ancient murders, Mr. Manning?
Not tonight, Duval. Ancient or otherwise.
Stick around, Mr. Manning. I'll show you a murder the likes of which you've never seen before. Okay, boys, drag it out of the river.
What is it, Inspector?
A corpse, Monsieur Westcott. A corpse that's been squashed thin as a piece of paper.
Well, let's see it. Oh, what do you mean, thin as a piece of paper?
Bring it over here, boys. Right under the gaslight.
Horrible-looking thing, isn't it?
Horrible and fascinating. It looks like it got squeezed in a giant press.
We've had an epidemic of these corpses lately.
Any idea who's doing it?
Not even a vague notion, Mr. Man. Hey. Hey, you. You, the fat man.
You mean me, Inspector?
Yes, I mean you, fat man. How come you're always around when we pull a corpse out of the river?
Why? I enjoy murder.
You enjoy it? You enjoy murder?
It appeals to my sense of the artistic.
Oh, it does.
Well, there's something fascinating about these bodies. Something for a connoisseur alone to appreciate. The symmetry of the remains. The beautifully flawless flatness of the corpse. The hollow in the stomach. Lying in this puddle of gaslight, this mass of flesh and bones makes a nice picture. I should enjoy painting this, if I could paint.
I know what you mean, fat man, but wouldn't you prefer probing the mind of a man who conceived this crime?
A man's mind is his secret self. Well, enjoy the ghastly spectacle, my friend. Enjoy it. Good evening, gentlemen.
All right, men. Take the body down to the morgue and try and find out who it is.
Come on, Burke. I'd like to follow that fat man.
In heaven's name, why? He's nothing but a psychopathic case.
I want to satisfy a hunch.
Well, if you're such a good detective, why don't you join Scotland Yard?
Well, I might, Burke. I might at that. Now, where the devil has that gross piece of flesh disappeared to now? He was right in front of us until we turned this corner.
Well, we've lost him, Jack. And I don't wonder. We've passed through every side street in the whole city. If you ask me, he knows he was being followed.
Good. If he knows, he'll show his hand sooner. Now, the only place he could have gone around here is into the back door of this house. I wonder what house this is.
It's a gloomy dump. Let's go back to the hotel, Jack. I've got to finish that manuscript tonight.
It's like a public bar to me. The La Belle Tavern. Are you coming with me, Burke, or are you going home?
I'm with you, old boy. I brought you to Paris, and by heaven, I'm going to return you to America.
This must be the doorbell. Here goes. And Burke, no matter what I do tonight, don't worry.
Come in, gentlemen. Come in.
You were perfectly right, fat man. Those two Americans did follow you. They're sitting at the bar inside.
The Americans value their lives so slightly. Amazing, isn't it, Cecilia?
Their lives. Our lives. They might be cops. I don't want to get my neck in a noose.
To be quite candid, I am not interested in your neck. You're so impatient, and impatience is an evil ascribed to the very young. It might be a pity if you are not allowed time to cure yourself of that evil.
Don't threaten me, you fat pig. You pig.
I'd hope to slap some sense into that lovely but empty head. Obviously, my stupid pigeon, those two Americans are wealthy. They would enjoy our roulette table. If you would show them to it. Remember, I'll talk to the croupier, and he will take care of the wheel of fate. If you don't do your part well, you face a lifetime in jail.
What happens if they get wise? Room 16?
But of course.
Let me go.
I knew you'd understand.
Yeah. I understand. There's something so gay about Americans, I always say. I hope you boys don't mind if I stick around.
Well, miss, I...
Not at all, miss, not at all.
You can call me Cecilia. How about another drink?
That's fine.
Three more of the same, bartender.
What do you do for a living, Cecilia?
Oh, I model. In a dress shop.
I don't believe you, Cecilia.
Jack, stop ribbing the girl. She's a good kid.
Well, I'm on the level. I'm interested in
her. Here's the drinks.
Thanks.
Why do I interest you?
Well, because you're fairly easy to figure out.
Am I? Why?
You really want me to tell you?
Sure I do. Well, here's mud in your eye.
Touché.
Potent stuff, Jack. Potent stuff tastes like cyanide.
Well, Cecilia, I'd say you're a poor girl who lives in the slums. But you're pretty.
Mm.
Prettier than anybody in your entire neighborhood. Well, let's see. And then you must have met a man.
What of it? I'm no saint.
He promised you a lot of doodads, and suddenly you found you'd committed your first crime. Let's say, murder.
What'd you do? Set her mother on fire?
Oh, well, for that, let's have three more drinks. Bartender, three more. Well, now, let's say it really was murder. The second murder wasn't so hard, and the third was easy, wasn't it?
I never had nothing to do with a murder.
Well, for the sake of argument, let's say you have. But inside of you, all the time, is this wanting to be liked, wanting to be on the level. But your so-called friends, they don't trust you, Cecilia. Someday they'll double-cross you.
I hear the drinks.
Thank you.
Nobody will ever double-cross me. Well, here's mud in your eye. Drink up, boys.
Is there anything else to do around here?
You seen the gambling rooms?
Gambling rooms? Ah, that's me. Who runs those gambling rooms, Cecilia?
I don't know.
One of your friends? A fat man, perhaps, with a long nose?
I don't know the owner. Gosh, you're real nice.
Is the fat man in the back room now?
Probably. Gambles here a lot. Do you replay?
Sure.
Well, come on, Jack. We'll see who's right. My books or your instincts.
Number 21 wins.
Jack, the fat man's in the corner of the room.
Yeah, I saw him, Burke.
And he saw you, old boy. Don't think he didn't.
Come on, boys, let's play.
Money, money, money. Place your bets, gentlemen.
They'll make some room for us over here. Come on.
Hello, Cecilian.
Hello, Monty Laureate. You playing again? I thought you lost every cent you owned last night.
A desperate man finds desperate ways to raise money.
Even murder, eh? You heard about it.
Perhaps. And perhaps not.
I'd like you to meet some new friends of mine, Monty. This is Jack Westcott and Burke Manning. Monty Laureard.
How do you do?
Money, 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 gentlemen. Place your bets.
I bet 30 francs on odd.
I'll bet 100 francs on number 13.
Good boy, Jack.
The play is dead. Round and round the little ball goes. Where she stops, nobody knows.
Hey, Burke, I feel a little dizzy. You had too much to drink, pal, and those drinks were strong.
Number 13 wins.
What? I won!
Good for you, American. Lucky for you. I won the first time I ever played here, but never again.
Money, 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 money.
That was the first time Jack won in that incredible evening. But as the ball spun, his winnings increased. The table seemed to have gone crazy. Jack became gambling drunk. The croupier seemed desperate as that wheel spun round and round, each time increasing Jack's winnings. The room was tense with excitement, and even the little thin loser, Laureate, seemed surprised.
Monsieur Westcott, your luck is phenomenal. You've won 30 times. 30 times.
Jack, you've won a fortune, man. Stop now before it's too late.
Leave him alone, Burke. Let him play if he wants to.
Sure, let me play if I want to. I want to break the bank.
Careful, monsieur. Let me warn you. Careful.
Jack, it's almost midnight, and I've got a lot of work to do tonight. Please, let's go. And remember the fat man.
The fat man be hanged.
Here, Jack. Have another drink.
Thanks, monsieur.
Jack, be sensible.
Ah, stop being an old auntie, Burke. I'll see you later at the hotel. Make the book have a bloody ending. I'm in the mood for a good murder tonight.
Remember, Jack, I warned you. Goodbye.
Money, 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 gentlemen. Place your bets.
I told the croupier you wanted to see him back here, fat man, but it wasn't the croupier's fault the American broke the bank.
That is for me to decide. Where is the American now?
Outside, buying drinks for the house.
Good, good. That ought to keep him busy.
You...
You called for me, monsieur?
Yes, yes, I did. I'll need you too, Cecilia. Shut the door. I don't like to frighten our patrons.
I'm sorry about the wheel, monsieur, but it was broken and I couldn't control it.
That is unfortunate for you.
What are you going to do, monsieur?
Come here.
Don't put your fat hands on me, fat man. Let me...
Don't fight the fat man. You can't move, can you, croupier? Because if you move, my arm will break your neck. Call my men, Cecilia. I might need a little aid with this stupid fool.
What are you going to do, fat man?
Have his brains pressed out of his body in room 16. His mind is no good where it is now.
No, no, monsieur. Please, monsieur. Not room 16.
Not room 16. Oh, good heavens.
Not room 16. No, no. Yep.
It even terrifies the goat.
Even terrified the goat. That was a scared scream.
Yes. As all goats should. When they're not cleaning
yes.
their property.
Yeah, the fat man.
I know. I was thinking of the radio, fat man.
Yeah. Thinking of the radio one, the fat man, that's the only time, well, that and Nero Wolf, who
yes.
was originally called the fat man in the Sam Spade Maltese Falcon from Dashiell Hammett. And kind of what's fun about the fat man radio series, it was the only series that was actually created by Dashiell Hammett. He didn't really have anything to do with the scripting, but he had already had Sam Spade, and I think Philip Marlowe may have been his, but the Thin Man was turned into radio series, and so he said, well, might as well make the Fat Man, and he also became a radio detective. J. Scott Smart played him for, 5 or 6 years on ABC Radio, and one movie.
And the movie. Quite the
which I liked. I got to host that with great pleasure. I always liked the movie. I caught it a couple times on Turner Classic Movies and recorded on the Beta. That's how long ago it was, and always
Beta.
Loved that because it's got a young Julie London, a young Rock Hudson. Who else is it? Oh, and one of the few screen appearances of the world's greatest clown, Emmett Kelly, as well as J. Scott Smart, who reprised his radio role. For the movie. Never got a second one because, and actually, Dashiell Hammett was another one of the victims we talked about earlier of the blacklisting. Well, he was caught in the blacklisting scandal, and he had his name ripped off of the movie because they were afraid of, you know, the blacklisting. So even though it was on a character created by him, he got no credit for it on the film.
Yep. GGSI Papers suggests, what about our new radio program, The Fat Man? Meets the Thin Man.
Was that after he sat on him or before?
Yeah. That's right. He sits on him and crushes him. The Thin Man sings no more.
But an interesting tale from Poe that we have going on here.
Yeah, we do from Weird Circle. We might as well wrap it up. Who knows what kind of fun we may have before the night is over. As we wrap up.
True.
Yep. Wrapping up A Terribly Strange Bed.
What was that, Monsieur Laurier?
We'll probably be luckier if we don't ask questions.
I want another drink.
Jack, listen to me. Put on your hat and coat and leave this place. You're being watched all the time.
Who's watching me?
Hello, Jack.
Oh, have a drink.
No, Jack. You've had enough to drink. Leave this place right away.
She's right, Jack. You must leave. I'll see you home personally. Come on, then.
No, I know you don't, Monty Laurier. I know your tricks. The last man you saw home was found with a dagger in his breast.
How come you're so interested in me, Cecilia?
Because you're the first person who ever treated me decent. Oh, please go home.
What? Sooner or later, every woman develops some mother complex over me. Now, I don't want to be mothered.
Who is trying to mother you, my friend?
Oh, hello, fat man. Cecilia's.
Ah, she's developed a rather latent maternal instinct. I think a maternal instinct is out of place tonight. After all, tonight's a night for celebration.
Yeah, the fat man's right. Celebration. Bartender, open a bottle of champagne.
Bartender, champagne. Champagne for Monsieur Westcott. Won't you join us, Cecilia?
Yeah. Of course I will.
Here is the champagne, Monsieur.
Won't you drink with us, Monsieur Lurias?
No, thank you, fat man. I don't think so. I never enjoyed toasting to death.
Death? Open the bottle, bartender.
Good night, Jack. And good luck.
Good night. Good night, good night, good night, good night.
Here's the handkerchief, fat man.
Oh, Jack, your money is all tied safely in your handkerchief.
Thank you, friend. Thank you, Jack. Where will I put the handkerchief?
It would be wisest to tie it to your belt.
I feel dizzy, fat man.
Oh, you need a cup of good hot coffee. That will straighten you right out. Cecilia, go in the kitchen and fix our friend a cup of coffee.
But I really...
Don't tell me, my little pigeon, that your hearing is failing you.
I'll get it right away.
I'm glad we're alone, fat man. I want a chance to talk to you.
Talk away, Jack.
Tell me confidentially. Why do you enjoy seeing a mutilated body dragged out of the river?
There's beauty in death.
In the act of death, or in the recovery of a body after life has left it?
In both.
Then do you enjoy committing a crime?
Perhaps. Perhaps it would be pleasant to watch a man die. Slowly. Very slowly. In order to see life leave the body. Say that you and I watched a murder by pressure. What would happen?
I'm interested, fat man. What would happen?
The face is the first part affected. It would turn red. And the victim would probably feel hot blood pounding in his brain. Pounding like steel hammers.
Mm-hmm.
Then his eyes would feel sore, as if the fluid creating sight were ebbing slowly away.
That would be painful?
Painful but glorious. His face would discolor. The pressure on his chest would be so great he'd try to scream, cry out, but he couldn't. He wouldn't be able to move, not a limb, not a muscle. He'd be paralyzed. I'd see to that. And in that moment, all the horror that is in man's mind would be indelibly imprinted on the brain until a sudden crushing noise would blot out thought.
And what would that crushing noise be?
The pulverizing of the human bone.
Here's the coffee, fat man.
Ah, let me see it. Tastes all right. Here you are, Jack. This will fix you.
No, I don't think I want any. If you'll pardon me, I'm so dizzy. So frightfully dizzy.
Oh, of course you are. Here, Jack, drink it. Drink it, my friend. My good, good friend.
If you don't want to drink it, that Jack, don't.
Open your mouth, my friend. It will sober you very quickly.
No, I...
Open your mouth. There. Now, how do you feel?
I'm sick. It's dope, isn't it? It's dope.
Our friend Jack is asleep, Cecilia. Call the bartender. I think our friend will spend the night with us in room 16.
Looking all over Paris for you, monsieur.
You've been looking for me?
Yes, I've called every hotel in the city trying to find you. I know you don't remember me, but I met you earlier this evening at the La Belle Tavern. My name's Lauriard of the Paris Police Force.
Yes, of course. Won't you come in?
Where's Mr. Westcott?
I had to leave him at the tavern. He wouldn't listen to me. You see, monsieur, I've been assigned to watch that tavern. It's been under suspicion for several weeks.
Oh, great Scott, man, where's Jack now?
At the tavern. He's carrying an enormous amount of money on his person. I know the fat man will never allow him to leave with that money.
Why don't you raid the den?
Unfortunately, we can't. We have no proof. As a matter of fact, they might not harm him at all. But just in case, I thought it might be a wise idea for you to go down there. You can go to the door and ask for...
Yes? What do you want?
You're the bartender, aren't you?
I am not Napoleon's grandma. What do you want?
My friend Jack Westcott hasn't come back to the hotel as yet. We've been waiting for him, and I thought that he probably decided to spend the night here at your place, and
your
I...
Your friend is not here. Go home, American, before you get yourself in more trouble than you can handle.
Who was it?
The other American asking about his friend. Where are you going?
Upstairs. To take Monsieur Westcott a candle, like the fat man told me.
Be sure the fat man told you, or else...
I'm sure. Very sure. Jack. Jack, I brought you a candle. Are you asleep? Wake up, Jack. Please wake up. Please. Maybe if I shake him. Wake up. Oh, I hate to slap you, but your life depends on it.
What is it?
Wake up, wake up.
Jack. Jack. Luckily, he's still asleep. Come, Cecilia. Let our friend sleep. I'm so sick. So dizzy and sick. Why didn't she let me sleep? Oh, I feel paralyzed. I can't move at all. Just as if I'm drugged. Maybe if I concentrate on the room, I'll go to sleep. Funny. Funny that a French gambling house should have a bedroom. What is an old English four-poster bed doing in a French room anyway? What a heavy canopy over my head. So solid looking. Almost as if it were made of steel. The mattress is so hard. I must concentrate on something. The picture above my head is just even with the canopy. An evil-looking Spaniard with five feathers in his head. The eyes moved. I'm certain of it. The eyes moved. I wonder if I dare look up again. I was sure there were five feathers. Now there are only four. Four feathers. Four feathers. Now three feathers. I wonder who's outside my door. I'll try to sleep. No, look at the picture. What? The feathers have disappeared. I can barely even see the face. God in heaven. The canopy is being lowered on me. That's what it is. The canopy. It can't move. The paper thin corpse. Oh, I gotta move. It's coming closer. Closer. Oh, that squashed me. Oh, I must move. I can't do it. It's almost down. Halfway down. I move. Oh, just to crawl out of bed. Oh, if I get a crawl, I'd crawl out of here. I'm safe. Safer than that horrible contraction. Now to get out of here. The window. Open the window slowly. I'll crawl to the window. Now, if I can push the window open slowly, very slowly.
The bed must have clamped down on him by now. Listen to me, men.
Push the window open. It's stuck.
Be sure and deliver the money back to me.
There. Now to open it wide and crawl through.
You can raise the canopy now. Let's go in, gentlemen.
Help! Help somebody!
Get
help me!
Get that man before
he... Help me! Somebody!
I've got him.
Out the window!
If the bed didn't work the first time, Mr. Westcott, I've weighed the means of making it work the second, and perhaps it would be more pleasant to watch life ebb out in front of me.
No, no.
Place him carefully on the bed.
Let me go.
Good. This ought to prove most enjoyable, Mr. Westcott. It's a pity you haven't my detached viewpoint.
Let me go.
Put him in. Then lower the canopy.
No.
Miss Weber, up this way. Hurry, Miss Gloria, I can hear the bed moving.
Cecilia, you fool. Get Jack out of that bed.
Jack, boy, here, hold on to me. I'll drag you out.
Don't you put your hand on me, Gloria.
Lock into there. I'll take care of the bartender for a long time.
I'm all right, Burke. Don't worry about me. I'll just see
you. I'll help her.
Let me go, Cecilia. Don't push me.
Help me,
don't.
Gloria. Help. No, you don't, fat man.
You little...
No, you don't. You're on the mic of me, a Frankenstein.
Well, Inspector Duval, that's the story. Lauriard and Burke were waiting outside all the time. They saw me at the window, and Cecilia let them in.
Close shave, eh?
A lucky escape. Lauriard and I pulled him out of the bed just in time, and Cecilia pushed the fat man under the canopy as it closed down.
Must have been a horrible sight, Burke.
Well, what about Cecilia, Inspector? What would they do to her?
Unfortunately, the police can't find her. And I've instructed them not to look too hard.
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have heard the story, A Terribly Strange Bed. Bellkeeper, toll the bell.
This is the first, I think, the first glimpse of the unsuccessful Craftmatic adjustable bed.
Okay.
They had to do a lot of changes, you know, make the bed get softer and harder instead of the canopy coming down and smothering you. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's gone through some revisions since then, but
a few revisions here and there. Yeah.
That was the pilot version. The demo.
Yeah.
If you will.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I learned something there.
Okay. Well, I guess maybe we could have learned something else. I'm not sure. But I think we could try.
Well, I hope so, because I got nothing. Eerie House Radio proudly presents A Garland Moral of the Story of Sorts.
Apologies to Gar. You know, booze and gambling rooms and good-looking women are never a good match. Either way, you're going to lose all your money. That's it. That's all I got. Thank you, Slim.
Hey.
There we go.
When your vision's going, you take what you take the sound bite you get. It's kind of potpourri at this point.
Yep.
But
I understand
I can see
that.
Well enough to see we got an extra feature tonight that has to do with beds. And one of the greatest horrors of bedtimes is sending a little kid off to bed.
Oh, man. Did you have trouble sending your kid to bed?
Yeah.
Kids?
Yeah, absolutely. Michael, especially. The boy, especially.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand that.
He did not want to go.
Yeah.
I had to rock him to sleep.
I think...
I used a big rock.
My oldest wasn't too bad. My youngest, I call them DJ and the anti-DJ. Those are my two kids. And the anti-DJ did not like to go to bed.
No. Michael, I had to rock him to sleep. Boy, I had a nice rock, too. Nice bedtime rock.
I was going to say, my mother tried to rock me to sleep, but she usually used a brick from the fireplace instead. Yeah.
There you go. Whatever it takes. Daddy's got to go to work in the morning. Go to bed.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
There you go. And I imagine it would be very, very difficult to get baby Schnooks to bed.
Oh, darn near impossible, I would think.
Let's find out with this episode of Snooks Off to Bed. We'll be back.
Hello?
John?
Hello, Daddy.
You won't disappoint me tonight.
Disappoint you?
Yes, you're bringing the gang over to my house. Tonight's my 10th wedding anniversary.
Oh, yeah. Congratulations, Daddy. Does your wife, does she know you asked us to come?
She knows. We argued about it for 3 hours. Please come.
Well, I will be there, Daddy. Has the party started yet?
For everybody except me. As soon as I get through making the sandwiches, I have to put Snooks to bed. Then I can join the guests.
Oh. Well, have a good time till we get there.
I'll try. Goodbye, Joe.
So long, Daddy. Poor Daddy. I'll bet he won't do much celebrating tonight.
Daddy!
I'm coming, Snooks. Don't yell.
Why?
Because the guests... Snooks! Get back into your room quickly.
I want to look.
No.
I want to look.
Get upstairs. You don't want all those people downstairs to see you walking around in that nightgown, do you?
Uh-huh.
Do you? I've never heard of such immodesty in all my life. That parlor is full of guests.
I want to go down and look.
Stay here. The very idea of a young lady of your age coming downstairs in her nightgown. What could be worse?
Coming down without it.
I wouldn't put it past you. Now, Snooks, are you going to spoil this evening for me?
No, Daddy.
All right. Just hop into bed.
What's this party for, Daddy?
Mummy and I are celebrating our 10th wedding anniversary.
Have you been married 10 times?
10 years. I married your mother 10 years ago today.
Is that a long time, Daddy?
Time can either be an eternity or go like a spurt. It's purely relative.
Like Uncle Louie?
Not that kind of relative.
Well, you said Uncle Louie goes for his skirt every time.
I said go like a spurt.
What goes like a spurt?
Time. When a man is happily married for 10 years, it can feel like 1 minute.
How do you know?
I read it somewhere. But I do know if you sit on a hot stove for 1 minute, it feels like 10 years.
How long have you been sitting on the stove, Daddy?
10 years, and brother, I'm just about done.
Daddy!
Yes?
Did you get any presents?
No.
Why?
Well, the 10th wedding anniversary is called a tin wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the custom to bring presents made of tin. But tin happens to be unobtainable. So all your mummy's friends use that as an excuse to bring nothing.
What did your friends bring?
My friends brought mummy's friends.
Have they got tin?
No. All they've got is a lot of brass. Stuffing themselves down there, sponging all the time, and I don't make a button on the deal.
I'm going to give you a present, Daddy.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. I know where there's a beautiful tin can.
Tin can? Well, I suppose you're sincere. So I'll accept your tin can, Snooks. Where is it?
Well, when I last seen it, it was going past Red's house.
The tin can was going past Red's house?
Yeah. We tied it on a cat's tail.
That's a very savage trick. You mustn't torture animals.
It didn't hurt the cat, Daddy.
How do you know what a cat feels?
Cat feels like a cat.
They have sensibilities just like humans.
Well, this cat didn't have no manners.
No manners?
No, she kept spitting on her feet and wiping them on her face.
That's the way cats clean themselves.
Yeah.
Now, I want to go downstairs and get some of that dinner before those wolves devour it. Good night.
Good night, Daddy. Oh, Daddy.
What is it?
What are you going to have for dinner?
Oh, lots of things.
Have you got ice cream?
Yes.
Is it strawberry ice cream?
Yes.
Will you save some for me?
Yes.
Yes, what?
I'll save you some of the strawberry ice cream.
I don't like strawberry.
Well, what do you like?
Turkey.
Turkey?
Yeah. Turkey is my favorite chicken, except duck.
Well, it so happens we have got a turkey down there, and I'll save you a piece of that.
Where'd you get the turkey, Daddy?
It's the turkey that I've been fattening in the backyard for 3 weeks.
The live one?
He's not alive anymore. Since it was my 10th wedding anniversary today, I decided to kill him.
Just because you got married, you ain't got no right to take out that poor little turkey.
Oh, fiddlesticks. You're making the whole event sound tragic. Good night.
Good night, Daddy. Daddy.
Oh, what do you want?
Is a wife a man's better half?
Well, where'd you hear that?
Mommy tells everybody she's your better half.
Oh. I suppose that's the accepted expression. Why?
Well, if a married man... If a man marries twice, there ain't much left of him, ain't there? Almost all that up.
That's a very wise observation. But very few men are short-sighted enough to get two wives.
You don't like being married, do you, Daddy?
Certainly I do. And stop tormenting me. I don't want to discuss marriage with you any longer.
Well, tell me how you married Mommy.
Oh. Will you go to sleep if I do?
Uh-huh.
All right. I attended a dance given by a social club I belong to, and she was there.
Yeah.
I must say, she looked extremely pretty
yeah.
in those days. And I was instantly struck.
Did she hit you?
No, she didn't hit me. I was struck by her beauty. But I was always a stickler for convention. And I wouldn't ask her for a dance until we'd been properly introduced. Finally, the president of my club introduced me to her.
Was he a friend of yours?
I thought he was. But for years afterwards, I found it very difficult to believe he acted without malice aforethought. At any rate, 2 months later, we became engaged.
You and the president?
Me and Mommy. We were both very young and had no idea of the financial responsibilities attached to marriage, so we eloped and got married.
Why?
I don't know. I suppose I mistook sympathy for love. I wasn't earning very much, and I wanted somebody to feel sorry for me.
I feel sorry for you, Daddy.
Oh, it's not necessary. We were very happy, even with the pittance I made as a draper's assistant. And somehow, we always managed to make both ends meet. Would you believe it, Snooks, when I married your mommy, she didn't know what I was getting?
I bet you didn't know either.
Stop that. I want to go downstairs and at least act pleasant, so don't steam me up.
Now, tell me some more about you and Mommy.
There isn't any more to tell. It's possible I haven't been such a great husband, you know. And Mommy isn't always in the wrong.
You really like her, don't you, Daddy?
Of course I do. We've struggled a long way together, and I'm still hoping to make a lot of money someday and give you all every comfort that you should have.
How will you make it?
Oh, the angels will show me the way.
Did the angel always show you the way?
Always. They got us through those first trying years. They've seen to it that I'm steadily employed. They nursed us through lots of illnesses. And they're responsible for the food on our table.
Angels are wonderful, ain't they, Daddy?
They certainly are. Now say your prayers to them and go to sleep.
Yes, Daddy. Dear angels, please take care of my mommy and my daddy and Robespierre and Uncle Louie and Aunt Sophie.
Yes?
And please, dear angels, take good care of yourself, too. Because if anything happens to you, we'd all be in the soup.
Good night, sir.
Good night, Daddy. And happy anniversary.
Thank you. Good night, baby.
Well, that puts that one to bed.
It does.
night, Chinook.
But we still have more... Still have more time left.
We do. And we should probably just go ahead and... You know what, Dave, I've never done before? We've
What's
always
that?
Put a nickel, a wooden nickel, into the jukebox. I have found in the bottom of a dresser drawer a wooden dime. I'm going to put a wooden dime. I'm going to put the wooden dime in and see what the hell happens.
Let's do that.
Music of King Gaian and My Blue Heaven.
Anything to you?
Sure does. Pretty soon, the 4th of July.
Oh, Harvey, look into my eyes and tell me, what do you see?
Mascara.
Harvey, don't you see what I'm driving at? It's June and the wedding bells are ringing for everybody but us. Harvey, dear, why shouldn't it happen to us?
Good old Myrtle. Always right there when a fella needs a song cue. It has happened to a cricket in a thicket. It has happened on a streetcar and a bus. There has even been a rumor. It has happened to a puma. Why shouldn't it happen to us? It has happened to the mama of a llama, to a pelican and to an octopus. Since it happened to the swordfish, it no longer is a board fish. Why shouldn't it happen to us?
Cupid oftentimes has focused on a locust, on a bobolink and hippopotamus. Even heifers out in Kansas have occasional romances. Why shouldn't it happen to us? Oh, the busy little hornet doesn't scorn it. To ignore it really is ridiculous. It's a ritual in Turkey, Martinique, and Albuquerque. Why shouldn't it happen to us?
There's no ration on passion. L'amour is always in fashion. It wings beggars and kings.
Take the cheetah, anteater, the halibut and mosquito.
Yes, and billy goat all feel their oats.
Oh, it thrills the tiny sparrow to its marrow. And the armadillo deems it super plus. Why our ancient barnyard rooster finds it quite a morale booster.
Why shouldn't it happen to us?
I have even heard a reindeer whisper.
Please say that again, dear.
Why shouldn't it happen to us?
Why shouldn't it? Yeah, that was Martha Tilton and Jack Smith. And before that, we had Guy King with My Blue Heaven.
Yep. A lot of fun there tonight, Dale. So much air. But is there anything that we can have fun with tomorrow night?
Maybe. we're going to make our bed and sleep in it and stuff with Quiet Please.
Okay.
And something called Everything for the Boys. You're going to have to explain this one, Dave.
Yeah, well, it's Arch Overtail. And that's a World War II show that went out to the armed services. It was recorded and sent out to them. And it's an Arch Overtail story called An Ostrich in Bed.
The only thing that would be better is if Ronald Coleman was in it.
And he is. Wouldn't that be great?
The devil, you say.
So,
DGSI Paper, thank you for the kind words on tonight's show. Join us tomorrow at 6:30 for those two. And then afterwards, I'm sure there's going to be a vault version of Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul. Because if he's got two fingers working, he's going to find some way to entertain you. Gar
is something else. I went into this real cheap hotel once. They told me after I paid for them, I'd have to make my own bed. Well, that's okay. I can make my own bed. So they hand me a saw and some boards. You know?
Wow.
That's a cheap
couple
place.
Bags of feathers. Here you go. Have fun.
Sorry. Couldn't resist it.
Most of the bed jokes I know I won't tell here. We miss you. Hope you're doing well. And we want to thank again Fogs Bane, good old Bob, and GGSI Paper for joining us.
Yes.
For two.
And the throngs.
Hours.
Yep, and the throngs in the archive.
Yes, the billions and billions that we don't see. Either live or otherwise. Might as well take a minute to mention a few of them. Daryl Heff, thank you for all the likes on the Erie House page for the crazy artwork stuff that we put up and ads for the upcoming shows. Jennifer, my buddy Chris from work, I know he's in the archives a lot.
And you know who else is usually in the archives when they're not here? Mm-hmm. Our good friend and fellow co-hostess, CW.
Yes, she does check a lot of our shows out, especially when she can't make them.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a ton in there. Get back in there. We've done so much stuff over the years. If you haven't heard something you want, either Facebook or just tell us right here in the chat live, or call us and yell at us and say, hey, how come you haven't played? And we'll dig it up.
That's right. Over 1,300 complete radio shows are sitting there in the archive for you.
Yep.
Wait. Is that right? Is that the show? Yeah, I think it is. Let me pull this over.
And if there's no
just
particular
sure.
shows,
yep.
I'm going to throw the dare out there. Give us a topic. Dave can make radio shows out of any topic. He can weave them together for a night of fun, and then we'll do crazy stuff with it as always.
Absolutely. We'll see what we can do.
But that's it for tonight. We will see you tomorrow at 6, or hear you, or you'll hear us, or vice versa, at 6:30 Eastern. Well, safe
easy for you to say.
Drive home.
Safe, easy for you to say.
That's right.
The castle lights are growing dim.
Easier for him.
There's no one left but me and him.
And only him.
When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Okay.
And you dig it.
Sorry, I left my shovel out in the garage. Wasn't that funny, Vin?
Again, I missed the door. Oh, well. Oh, Dave, for a minute there, I just lost all my energy. I felt like I had zero zing or pup, or I couldn't keep two thoughts together.
Yeah.
But I'm having a second wind. The sugar kicked in.
Yeah, last time I had a second wind, everybody made me leave the room. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you shouldn't have broke it.
Oh, my.
There you go.
My.
That's what happens when you break things.
Yep.
Don't break things. Especially the wind.
Yep, especially the wind.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yep. Terrible. Lots of fun for listeners coming up. We got a weekend of Superman. Nice.
Yeah. Eight-part Superman story coming up. We'll talk more about that tomorrow, but yeah, next weekend, an eight-part Superman adventure.
Mm-hmm. And we'll be keying in on some things. Let's see. Too many shifts. Spoilers.
We got a drive-in coming. I have a drive-in coming up, Dale. A radio
drive-in. Oh, boy. What will our topic be for the drive-in?
It's a Vincent Price drive-in double feature. Price's birthday. It's a Vincent Price birthday drive-in double feature.
Nice. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
We love the Vincent. And it's time for me to make new, fresh drive-in hit.
Yep.
Yay. We'll don our Usher costumes that we wear every time we do the drive-in, folks.
That's right. Mine's a little tight, though, Dale, but I guess I can't blame it on the clothing. I have to blame it on me.
Yeah, boy, I know that feeling.
Do we really have to wear that bellhop cap, though? Do we really have to wear that?
Yeah, that's part of the costume. It's got to stay.
The most fun thing about it is having a flashlight to go around and look at everybody's cars while during the radio driving.
No, the worst part is scraping all the jujubes off the screen. Then we got to have the screen refinished or the radio doesn't sound right.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Goon Show coming up soon, too. Love that.
Which one's that?
The Goon Show coming up.
Oh, yeah, another Goon Show coming up. I have several of those in the future. We got one coming up in just a few weeks here. Which one is that? In the room when we have
get a room.
We need a room.
Get a room.
Yeah, we want a room, yeah. So we got a Goon Show coming up there. That'll be fun and all kinds of fun stuff coming up.
But it won't be room and board. You will not be bored.
No. No wonder we can never make any money on the show. Just room, no board.
There's lots of reasons. But, and I'm probably the main one. One has to monetize first. We'll get there. And we'll expand and keep this going. Because we got lots of radio to share. We ain't shared yet.
Oh, man. You know, I just don't know how many more topics I can come up with. The next thing I know is, I hear a good show and said, okay, let's match it up. And next thing you know, we got another weekend thrown in there.
Bang. Yeah. Dave, you're amazing. Your knowledge of this really helps you because, you know what I mean, you have a huge knowledge and database to cull from. But I'm just looking ahead at all these topics. There's like, folks, he's like about a year ahead of us, but we don't like to schedule too far.
Probably got to be close to that, yeah.
We don't like to schedule too far. Go ahead.
No, I just have through the first week in June, but, I think that we've got, I listed below that, I have into July already, so.
I don't know if I've seen the June. Have I seen the June one yet? Wait a minute. Let me
there's just a second and third, maybe. The
they're not dated. I have some going past May, but they're not dated.
Okay. Yeah, I changed a couple after that. So I'll finish up dating the Junes and send that off to you. So you know what we got going on there. Here.
Maybe I have it and I didn't drag it over yet.
No, because I made some changes after I had this. So yeah, I did find a way to get one of those midnight episodes in there. So then I moved it up from where it was and all kinds of fun like that.
Good, good, good. Now, folks, we don't like to plan too far ahead because we like to leave room in case we get, sometimes by surprise, sometimes by design, we get these great, tremendous guests. And we want to leave room for them. We want to, special events come up. We like to flip things around. Unfortunately, Dave has everything clustered, so it's easy to, it's almost like drop and drag, isn't it?
Yep, nothing is in granite. It's all there for us to move around as we need or as we see fit.
That's right.
To move things around.
And we're dead sincere when we are open to requests for things. Just reach out to us in any way you can, and we will do what we can do.
Best way is right through the Facebook page. Dale keeps a pretty good eye on that.
Yeah.
And
I at least take a peek every day, and at least a couple times a week with some Eerie House stuff to keep us, in the forefront.
The fact is, whatever show you like is going to roll around again at some point, but if there's one you really like, then, you know, I'd love to have a night where some of our viewers, regular viewers or listeners, have a topic that they really like or a particular show they really like, and we give them a night of that, so.
Yep.
It would be really cool, but you got to let us know, folks. So head over to that Facebook thingy and go to Eerie House Radio. And I think it's just Eerie House, isn't it? Not Eerie House Radio.
It's just
Eerie House.
It's just Eerie House because I want to be open to getting back into TV someday.
And so, you know, make sure you like that so you can follow it. And whenever we have new things coming up or previews for the show's about to come up, they're all right there for you. And takes a lot of the guesswork out of it.
Yep. And probably should get the great one out here.
All right. Well, in that case,
be
you know,
about
Dan,
that
we need,
time of night.
As always, we need to turn off the house lights, turn on the three spotlights, and stepping into the middle spotlight is the one and only Snajoli, Mr. Jimmy Durante.
Good night. It's time to say goodnight.
And the pickle.
What more to say but goodnight? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Aribo, up we the same, and in cut the Good night. Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Smooth.
CFN.
Do you mind signing off the radio?